Welcome to Healthy Brain, Happy Body, a podcast from the Northeast Region Biofeedback Society. I'm your host, Dr. Saul Rosenthal. On this podcast, we talk with experts about applied psychophysiology, biofeedback, neurofeedback, and all things brain-related. These are conversations to educate, raise questions, have some fun, and help us all lead healthier, happy lives. Today, we return to our conversation with Mitch and Angelica Sater about using the HBI database to provide information about brain functioning that goes beyond the QEEG. The Saters are both long-term neurofeedback providers and trainers, and they are involved with the ongoing development of the HBI database. In the last episode, we talked about some of the measures we can get out of the HBI. I also asked them more about the technical aspects of computing those measures and about the database itself. Welcome back with Angelica and Mitch Sadar. We've been talking about the HBI database, which is used to compare EEGs collected for our clients compared to a large normative database, frequently used to create QEEGs, brain maps. We also can get a lot of other information, a lot of other parameters out of it in addition to the QEEG. For example, probably one of the most important is the event-related potentials, the ERPs, which tells us about visual and auditory processing. Now, you've chosen the HBI. You've been working with them for a long time, and you know there are a lot of normative databases out there. What drew you to the HBI?
What I like about it is that it is always being built upon. It's being updated. So when we first got started with it, it didn't have the gender differentiation. It has since had that added. Now the age differentiation, and that's even been more refined along the way. And the research just keeps coming. So they keep adding to the database and they keep adding to the research. So again, more recently, there's been indexes that have been added as a result of the continued growth of the database. So it's very important that it's continually updated.
And are they still adding people to it?
Yes.
So again, one of the claims to fame, I guess, for the HBI is the ERPs that we can get out of it. And I'm not sure that there are any other, except maybe the Korean database, that do ERPs. I know that there are now ways to collect ERP data on BrainMaster equipment, but I'm not sure that there's a normative database for those. I'm sure someone will correct me if I'm about that. But right. We typically, when we're doing the data collection with the HBI, we're usually using the visual continuous performance task. Could you talk a little bit about what that is? But I think there are other ERP measures that are in the database as well, and maybe talk a little bit about those.
Yeah, well, there is. There's auditory. I think there's also emotion. There are various ones, but I must say that the most widely used is the visual continuous performance task, and the brain function analyzer that the HBI folks offer as a way to analyze the data is that program is largely aimed at the visual components.
But yeah, I know. Like with the VCPT, the auditory components are they're not isolated. They're with a visual component as well.
Right.
And so these are I guess what we would call biomarkers of various at least processing issues. What are some of the biomarkers that we can get out of this database? What can it tell us?
Well, okay, so. For example, the N1 component, which is the first negative deviation after a person gets the visual or the auditory input, if that is particularly large, if the size of that deviation is significantly different from the database, that is a marker for a potential residual symptom of trauma, because a person is reacting with a huge amount of intensity to either the visual input and or the auditory input. It's just, it's too much. And so that can be a marker for, and as I said, residual trauma. Likewise, and, yes, sir.
I was just going to say the number for the ERP, like N1 or P2, that's 100 milliseconds, or if it's two, it's 200 milliseconds after the stimulus is presented. Is that right?
Thank you. Yes. Yeah, that's roughly, yeah. Roughly speaking, I mean, there's a range there, but mm-hmm. It refers to when the deviation ordinarily occurs. And so talking about that, you know, you look at both the amplitude, but you also look at the latency. So with the auditory component, if that occurs slower, later than the normative database, that suggests the possibility of an auditory processing disorder. Now, this isn't, that in and of itself isn't enough to say that, but it then gives you the idea that the patient may want to consider getting an auditory processing evaluation. So these are the sorts of things, looking at the ERP, you can derive.
And in your talk, you go beyond, as you say, the QEEG to talk about the ERPs and things like that. And you had said earlier that in the VCPT, for example, there's 400 trials, which any of us who have done this with particularly some kinds of clients, it's a slog. Why so many?
That's a good word.
Why so many?
Well, that's one of the great things I think about the ERPs, because you're doing so many repetitions and you're averaging them. And when you're doing that, that is one of the factors that contributes to the ERPs being the most replicable of any type of brainwave analysis that we have available to us. You're not just measuring it once, you're measuring it 400 times.
And the ERPs, I think, again, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think many of them are, you can't just see them typically in the raw EEG. I think there's a few that you can, but you just need that multiple trials and the average across many trials to see it.
Yes. Yes.
So what do we do with the ERPs, and what do we do with the QEG, the EEG data? There are other parameters you've talked about as well, that the HBI database in particular, that the group's developing. Could you talk a little bit about some of those indices that they're working on?
Well, the ones that are available currently, that there is an arousal index, which looks at the areas in the brain that relate to the vegetative nervous system, and those results give you some idea as to the level of arousal. So, you know, so much of the field, or certainly the early field, was about arousal assessment, where you would ask a patient, you know, are you anxious, are you depressed, this, that, the other, and you would get a feeling for their arousal level. This is an index that looks at the patient's arousal. So that's a good kind of thing to directly compare with your arousal assessment. Then there is one called the Central Sensory Index. And this relates to, we can be aware of things out here. We can be aware of things within us. Ideally, we would be aware of both. This can also relate to introversion, extroversion, but you get to see, is a person, you know, do they kind of look at both of those, or are they more prone to look at what's happening within them, or are they more prone to look at what that's happening around them? There's an ADHD index where they take the overall results and they compare it with an ADHD sample and a normative sample and see if the overall results suggest ADHD. There's an emotional regulation index. And so there are just many, many additional ways to help you get as thorough of a picture or a feeling for the patient's brain function as you can.
And all of these are based on research that's in peer-reviewed publications.
Yeah, so on the most recent addition to the HBI report is about vigilance. And you may well know there's a huge area of research about vigilance. It's a fairly big deal. And what they have done is they have broken down the VCPT into 5 half-second intervals from when the first image appears and the second, and then for a second and a half following the second image. And this also, looking at that data, you get a very detailed look of where and when the brain might be not functioning optimally during a task. And it can also, again, point you to, you know, areas of the brain that are involved. So this is another way to get a look, a different viewpoint of what's happening in the patient's brain.
We'll go back to the SADARs in a moment. In the meantime, if you want to hear from more experts in biofeedback, neurofeedback, and applied psychophysiology, be sure to sign up for webinars at nrbs.org. Throughout the year, there are free talks, an inexpensive continuing education series, and a conference in the fall. Better yet, become a member. You'll get discounts for webinars and events, a monthly newsletter, and access to exclusive member gatherings. Go over to the website and join up. Now, let's return to my conversation with Angelica and Mitch.
Yeah, so with all these parameters, all these measures that we're getting out of the HBI that go beyond what we would typically need for QEEGs, for brain maps, for neural feedback training, as clinicians, how do we use those parameters like vigilance or ADHD?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. For me, again, the validation for the client, or in the case of a child, helping the parent to understand what the internal brain experiences that child is having, is very important. But beyond that, it also can help us in terms of developing therapeutic interventions. So again, if somebody has dysregulation with the sensory processing, looking at giving that person breaks, whether it be in school or at work or just in life, taking breaks, step away, kind of let yourself recoup so that you can get away from all the sensory input that can be hard to process. Being aware if you tend to be somebody who has difficulty monitoring, getting, you know, understanding, like, how did I do in that task? There have been times where we do the visual continuous performance task with somebody, and an adult may can miss 10 items. Doesn't sound like a lot out of 400, but they're supposed to be 100 times you click. And if you miss 10 of them, that's not 90%. That's like, I'm missing a bunch of time. I didn't get it. And if the person doesn't even realize they didn't get it, showing them that their brain is not showing strength in the area of monitoring their performance, monitoring how they're engaged, then we can start to develop skill sets for them, help them work through. Yes, maybe you should be listening to your wife a little bit more when she tells you you're doing this. But we got to work with the wife too, so that she does it in a way that it works. But also, when you think the job is done, the job's not done. So check with a coworker and just have them look over it for you, because that's something that we're going to work on developing with you. So again, in short, for me, it translates into, how do we intervene with them to help them be more successful in life?
Yeah, and if I can add, you know, earlier, Saul, we touched upon how the brain is very, very complex. And as much information from different viewpoints that we can get and that we can use. Now, you know, some people can be overwhelmed by all the information that is derived here, and sure, but the more information we as the provider are able to use and to utilize in helping us to understand the patient and helping them to understand themselves, the more the better. And even then, we're only touching upon it. I mean, you know, we are.
So this information obviously can help with formulation or understanding the clients. And you, Angelica, talked about behavioral interventions that we might design based on not just what the patient comes in with, but what their brain is telling us. Are there other ways that we can, or other types of interventions we can design from this data, other neuromodulation? So not just neurofeedback, but maybe things like transcranial magnetic or TCDS, or even choosing medications, different medications for, say, depression, if there's different patterns that show up. So are there other, I guess, neurobiomodulation approaches that this can also inform?
Yeah, I think in addition to those that you mentioned, there are some things that we know about medication and which ones work better with what kind of brainwave dysregulation, or some that don't work better. But also things like adjunctive devices such as, say, alpha stim, if there's a lot of dysregulation in the alpha rhythm, or if somebody's not producing enough alpha rhythm, that could be a good intervention to introduce. We use a lot of adjunctive devices, so like the David Delight, that can help guide us to how we might program that.
So that's just to say that the David Delights is an audiovisual entrainment device. So it uses both visual patterns of blinking lights at certain frequencies, or tones that try to entrain brainwave activity.
Exactly. And it might be that just as you described that, that probably wouldn't be the best device for somebody who has high amplitude in the visual and auditory processing areas. So it can guide us that way. Even though it's a good device, that might guide us to not use that as a first step of intervention. Heart rate variability is something we do with a lot of people. We recommend it very highly. It's a great adjunct to neurofeedback, but it may emphasize for us the, how imperative it might be to bring in the HRV training if we see certain patterns emerging.
Yeah. And there's and certainly exercise. You know, exercise is, one can argue, good for everybody. But for example, one of the times that I'll be sure to really try to emphasize with a patient to find some kind of an exercise routine, when we see evidence that their brain is activated and has a very difficult time deactivating, whether we see that in the Q results or the ERP results, the vigilance results, wherever, we'll say, find some kind of physical activity or, exercise, because neurons that fire together wire together. And when you exercise, when you get physically active, there is a natural activation, no matter where you are to begin with. And then when you cease the activity, there is a natural deactivation. And if you keep doing that over time, you can help your brain learn to better deactivate, which these results say you really need. So, we'll look at all sorts of things depending upon what the results are.
And back to what you were asking earlier, I think it's important to offer different solutions, but then our job is to work with the client to help them select the ones that are best for them. So to say to somebody, okay, this is what your brainwaves look like, this is what the ERP showed, this is what the EEG showed, you need to do neurofeedback. I don't think that's my role. My role is to say neurofeedback can help, but there are other things we can look at too that can be helpful. And let's pick the one that's best for you.
So you both are a little bit of insiders in the HBI database, and they're obviously, there's a lot of active development of it. Anything coming down the pike that we'd want to know about that you can talk about?
We get surprised all the time. We're like, what?
Well, one of the main things that's occurring is, Andy Mueller has literally himself done the analysis of maybe 10,000 cases, and he is now working with people who do machine learning and AI, so that they're looking to be able to input the data into the brain function analyzer and for it to be able to kind of put out just what are the important things and what are the important interventions. So if you would want reports based upon artificial intelligence, that they are looking to make that be a possibility. And then I'll also say they're also working on various other, in indexes, dementia and schizophrenia and the various ones. But again, they they won't do anything. They won't make that available until or unless they feel the research that they're doing supports the analysis.
I appreciate so much those indices, because these are things that we tend to measure by observation or self-report. And if we're lucky, we get neuropsych testing, which is about as close as we can get to what's going on in the brain. But to actually measure brain activity in order to tell us something about vigilance or tell us something about attention, I mean, once we're doing it, it's kind of a no-brainer. And yet, we can probably talk for a long time about, say, the DSM approach to diagnosis, but EEG, brain activity, is not part, I think, of any DSM diagnosis. And so for us to be able to look at it, and I think it goes beyond the diagnostic. I mean, the brain doesn't care what we call it. We can call it purple rather than ADHD. It's just, I think, like you'd said earlier, where brain just tries to get the organism through to the end of the day, however it can.
Yep.
And with the QEEGs, with the database, that tells us a lot more about how it's trying to do that. And I guess our job then is to try to help it do it better.
Yes.
And that's what everybody wants, is to be a little bit better than they are, or a lot better, but one step at a time.
But I think it was Marsha Linehan said, we're all doing as well as we can, and we all need to do better.
There you go.
Well, thank you both for joining us here on Healthy Brain, Happy Body. And I'm looking forward to your talk.
Saul, thank you for doing the podcasts. I really enjoy listening to them.
Thanks a lot, Saul.
You've been listening to Healthy Brain, Happy Body, a production of the Northeast Region Biofeedback Society. Go to nrbs.org to find out more about the organization, including our trainings, monthly webinars, and yearly conference. I'm your host, Dr. Saul Rosenthal, and our guides today to the Healthy Brain and Happy Body were Angelica and Mitch Sadar, psychologists and longtime neurofeedback providers and educators. They're using the HBI database to help us learn more about our clients' brain activities and how, as clinicians, we can use that information to develop better interventions. If you want to watch the free webinar, go to the NRBS website or follow the links in the show notes. And while you're at it, subscribe to the podcast. You can click the subscribe here link in the show notes or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Also, get in touch. We really want to hear from you. Be part of this ongoing conversation by contacting us with your thoughts, ideas, and questions at healthybrain@nrbs.org. Leave us reviews as well. It really helps podcasts like this one reach more listeners. Healthy Brain, Happy Body is produced and edited by me. The theme music is Catch It by Coma Media. This podcast is supported by the sponsors of NRBS, including Cerro Psychological and Sports Center, and the International Society for Neuroregulation and Research. Be sure to join us on our next episode as we continue to explore the keys to our well-being on Healthy Brain, Happy Body.